Welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. Real-world insights for your daily medical coding and billing processes. And now, here's your host, Terry Fletcher.
Welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. My name is Terry Fletcher. We are now in September. Happy to have everybody with us. Welcome to our new listeners and welcome back to our existing listeners. We appreciate the downloads and we hope you like our episode today. We're going to talk about virtual voice assistants. And this episode is brought to you by Keck Medicine of USC, 500 internationally renowned doctors at a leading academic medical center, keeping you healthy, on track, and doing things you love. KeckMedicine.org. So what we're going to talk about today are voice-activated virtual assistants. So you've heard different ones out there. You might not realize that they are assistants, but Amazon's Echo and Google Home, those are just a few that we've heard out there. Apple also has Siri. iPhones launched several years ago a tabletop that's called Siri HomePod. And so there's all kinds of different virtual access points that we can get information from. So even though they're convenient and helpful, they're not always what you want to see in a physician's practice. However, they're rising in popularity with physicians, but they can also create some legal headaches when used in a physician's practice. So we want to really take a look at this because almost a fourth of physicians' offices use virtual assistants at work for functions such as drug dosing questions, calendar appointments, supplying and ordering of diagnostic testing, information services. They're really looking at a lot of searching out information. And the recent survey done by American Medical Association, they were talking about this in one of their online chats. And they were saying that physicians actually use this to find out information, and they, just call them like just they're doing on the internet, where they call out a question. And they're actually using this information as how it is delivered. And we're seeing that this number is likely to rise as these products become more common. So, for instance, I mentioned Apple before on the tabletop Siri HomePod. That's been very popular in physicians' practices. And now, because so many patients have this and actually in their home, so the Echo, for example, like I have, voice assistants, now they're used to hearing it or seeing it in a physician's practice. And so they wouldn't think anything of it because people do it at home, so it must be accurate. But voice assistants are also integrated into some electronic health systems, so your EMRs. For example, eClinical Works added a voice-activated assistant called Eva into its electronic health software. With Eva, physicians can use voice commands to have the EHR pull up lab reports and other patient records. Several other EHR vendors have similar voice-activated assistants also under development. But like I said, they're under development, so you have to be a little bit careful with this from a physician standpoint, in my opinion, because even though they're easy to use and they can enable physicians to have more FaceTime with patients, these devices can really create a compliance risk, and we have to be cautioned about that because we know HIPAA, which is our Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, the safety, the privacy, the protected health information of patients. We just want to make sure that we are following the rules and understand what these possible risks could be. And so I want to give you really some top 7 risks that I came up with to just be careful. And I've done my due diligence on this, and I want to make sure that offices have taken this into consideration before you decide to move forward with a virtual voice assistant program. It just makes a difference in your office, if at least you don't have to worry about it. So the first one to me would be privacy violations. So because these are voice-powered devices, the physician's query and the device's response can easily be overheard by others. And so if a physician provides too much patient-specific information so as to make the patient identifiable and speaks more loudly than necessary, or positions the device so that it's not in a private area or can be heard through a patient wall, then it could be in violation of HIPAA or state privacy rights. And so think of what you do when you are at home and you're talking to, your Echo. And basically you're saying, Alexa, sometimes you have to scream at it to turn it on. And so that can be something that you have to be mindful of if you're using it in a physician's practice. So privacy violations would be the first thing. Second thing that I would be concerned with would be data security. So virtual voice assistants store users' queries, and some manufacturers may access the data for other purposes, such as marketing research or to share with third parties. I'm sure you've heard before with computers, sometimes computers have what we call a backdoor, meaning that the manufacturer or the person that made it can actually get into your system without your knowledge. And so I would make sure that that wasn't available and that they're not using any of that information for marketing research or to share with any other entities or parties outside of your practice. In addition, voice assistants have different levels and types of security for stored information. And so in speaking with an attorney out of New Jersey, there was something that came up that the iPhone Siri keeps recordings and transcripts, but ties them to random numbers, making the users more anonymous. But Amazon's Alexa is less secure, for example. It stores full transcripts that can be viewed by anyone who can access the account. So you've created data. Be aware this is another place where data is stored and who can access that data. I was just actually speaking to somebody recently online through email regarding passwords and how there's different apps and softwares now about passwords. And we went through a list of that, of the different applications that are available. And we came up with two of them that actually were secure where nobody could get into it. But the other 10 that we were talking about, it could be accessed through the cloud or it could be accessed through a system that maybe the user wasn't aware of. And you just don't want people to be able to hack into your data. So again, first one was privacy violations. Second one, data security. Now we get into security of the device. Now this is one of the most important aspects of risk that we're talking about. So kind of follow me here. Virtual voice assistants are part of what we call the Internet of Things. And I'm air quoting that right now. So like smart TVs, wireless insulin pumps, and yes, baby monitors. That's all things internet. Unfortunately, they are easily exploited by cyber criminals who can hack into them. They can eavesdrop on conversations. They can collect information for blackmail, for defamation. They can also disable or reprogram the devices or downloads with malware software that can then affect other connected electronic systems. So, you know, the FBI has issued warnings about the risks of Internet of Things, and that's what they call it. Virtual voice assistants have additional vulnerabilities because they're voice activated and they can be turned on by more than one voice. So an unauthorized person could access the scheduling calendar, for example, or the EHR, so electronic health record, and delete or change information. And then their actions could be blamed on the authorized user. So just from a practical perspective, the security of the device is again, different than data security. So that's about storing and what's in the device. But security of the device itself is about who can access that device. And that's where you have to really kind of be cautioned and watch that information and understand what happens within your practice. But before we move further, before we get into our next set of risks, I want to thank Creation Nation. And they are found on Twitter at CreationNA, leading source of daily inspiration and info for creative thinkers, innovators, artists, and entrepreneurs. Motivation, inspiration, creativity, and mindfulness. Creation Nation. So we appreciate them joining our sponsors. So now as we move forward, one of the other ones, and now we're on number 4. So unreliable or incorrect content. Just because a virtual voice assistant is programmed to search the internet does not mean the information it locates and spits back is reliable. So, and it's trustworthy. Think of that one commercial out there where, you know, she said, well, I found him on the internet and it was a dating service and he said he was French and he walks up and says, bonjour. And he's like from, who knows, you know, downtown Detroit or something. But I'm just saying, no offense to those people out there in Detroit. I'm just saying you got to be careful with that. Just knowing what you're finding on the internet, making sure that it is reliable, that it is trustworthy, and that it's either certified or been verified is really the word for it, that it's accurate. Too many people are going off of everything they hear on the internet as gospel. And remember, it's the World Wide Web, meaning that people can create content and there's really no way to verify it unless you personally do your due diligence. So you have to double, triple, and quadruple verify. You don't know how good the information is and whether it's validated. So for an example, here's a report that actually was done, and it was interesting. Apple did this report, and I thought it was interesting. They found that Siri HomePod correctly answered just 52% of 782 standardized questions. Microsoft's Cortana answered 57% correctly. Google Home fared better, but answered only 81% of the questions accurately. So these errors are particularly concerning when asking for and relying on clinical information. So if somebody is asking the internet to give them information on somebody having, let's say, a urinary tract infection or a colon cancer sign or symptom, and they're concerned, and basically they're just pulling it up on the internet instead of going to WebMD and finding a, you know, reputable physician that's giving that information instead of just using a virtual voice assistant, then you could be getting bad information. Those numbers are terrible. 52%, 57%, 81%. Unless I'm saying 98%, that concerns me. So you really have to be careful with unreliable or incorrect content. And if you know me at all, for those of you that have been taking this a while or ever taken any of my webinars or CMA to Live seminar, one of the things that I pride myself on, which has actually helped me as my reputation in the industry, is that if I'm nothing else, I'm accurate, I'm current, I make sure that the information is verifiable. And that's what you want to make sure you are also doing, that you can verify the information that you're giving to a patient. Otherwise, it just hurts your credibility and can cause all kinds of issues. Number six, and I think we're at number six here, medical record problems. So medical record problems, actually number five. What we're looking at here is virtual voice assistants that input automatically into the medical record may do so in a way that you don't want or makes the information hard to find. So others also don't transcribe voiced files. So they're not actually a perfect system. They're just a system out there that you can use. But what this means is that the clinician, the provider, needs to take notes on the information received from the device. So they're taking them manually and then enter them into the record. And so this is kind of duplicate information when we were trying to get into paperless documentation. If the clinician fails to do so, then the medical record could be considered faulty or incomplete. So that's where you have to know where it's actually located, and sometimes that's a problem. How many times have you downloaded something on your computer and you can't find it? Okay, so it's somewhere in cyberspace. Then we have malpractice concerns. So relying on information provided by a voice assistant and failing to keep complete medical records can be considered malpractice risks. And so because, tools store past queries, they can be discoverable in malpractice litigation. So anything that's in there that you may not want in there or may be inaccurate, that's the one thing about electronic health records, electronic medical records, inaccuracies follow the patient. So unless they are taken out or corrected, they just stay within and stored within that record. And so you could have some possible malpractice concerns. And then the last one that we want to talk about here really talks about wake-up errors. And this is the one that when I was at a practice looking at their virtual assistant, it was interesting because their device sometimes inadvertently turned on when they heard a word similar to their turn-on word. And their turn-on word was x-ray. It was an orthopedic practice. That's not the turn-on word you want to have at an orthopedic practice, because patients are getting x-rayed. They might be sitting in the waiting room saying, let's take you back to x-ray. And this just kept getting turned on. And then all this recording is happening and there's information that is just not appropriate to continue to be recorded. And then, for example, Alexa can turn on when hearing a word that sounds like Alexa. I don't know if you've heard that before. Ours in my house is sitting next to a table by our television. And I know that when my daughter's watching a program, she's like, Alexa, stop, because it kept saying something with regard to answering a question that was coming off the TV when it wasn't that. So very similar concept in a physician's practice. And it's just, when I bring these to your attention, I just want to make sure that you're really looking at the virtual voice assistants for accuracy, for using them for, yes, they're convenient, but the convenience of technology can create certain slip-ups and can create some risks and security breaches. And so you just have to be careful with that. Make sure you know what you're looking at and just make sure that it's not going to come back on you from a security standpoint. So we hope that you find that information helpful today. I really like to talk about that in the genre of medical, because it's just so different than what everybody's been dealing with lately. So those are just some of the things that we really like to talk about when it comes to management and some of the things that we talk about, which is compliance. So for my coding question today, I actually want to go back and talk about some things when it comes to diabetic shoe reporting. So again, we're the CodeCast. We always do an ending coding question. So if the patient in question is, and somebody asked me this recently, has diabetes, can they automatically get a diabetic shoe if there's an issue there with, because sometimes they'll need special footwear or orthotics because of the systemic issue when it comes to diabetes? Well, if the patient in question has a relevant diagnosis, such as diabetes due to underlying condition with foot ulcer or diabetes type 1 with hyperglycemia, then yes, you can actually use that diagnosis. If you're using the diabetes due to underlying condition with a foot ulcer, that is E08.621. And if it is with hypoglycemia, then that would be E10.64. And just make sure that you're also clear when you're dealing with diabetic shoe reporting that your medical record shows at least one diabetic-related condition, and it should be certified that the physician had an in-person visit with the patient. Otherwise, it's really hard to get that paid for. So you can have one of your mid-levels see the patient, but they want the payer wants to make sure that the physician either be an MD, DO, or podiatrist. They are the ones that have to actually certify the patient to be able to get their diabetic shoe. And so that is our episode today, folks. And I'd like to finish it by again thanking Keck Medicine of USC, 500 plus internationally renowned doctors at a leading academic medical center, keeping you healthy, on track, and doing the things you love. The Keck Effect, thekeckmedicine.org. Hope everyone had a nice holiday weekend. Go out and make it a great day and a great week. Thanks for listening.
For more information on medical coding, billing, auditing, and compliance, including how to hire Terry, follow Terry on Twitter at TerryCoder1 or visit her website at www.terryfletcher.net. Podcast producer Joe Kuzma. Music producer Dasassin Music.